as I said, the 129th Psalm. And you will see carefully that this is written in first person singular. But it doesn't tell you who the author is. Just Shira Ma'alot. And I think that when you look at the content, you will begin to see perhaps when this might have been written. Rabat Tzraruni Minu'urai Yomarna Yisrael. Rabat Tzraruni Minu'urai Gam Lo Yachluli. I wanted you to see that we have here a line that's repeated once, repeated twice, and an invitation. Rabat Tzraruni Minu'urai. And then he says, Yomar Na Yisrael, I want you, Israel, to say it now aloud. And you could almost imagine the crowd crying out, joining in, Rabat Tzraruni Minu'urai, because that's what he told them to say. And then he repeats, he being the leader, the poet, the one that speaks for the public, Gam Lo Yachluli, and they did not prevail over me. I want you to see, I have here a footnote, that this is similar to the 124th Psalm, where you saw as follows. Lulei Hashem shehayalanu, were it not for God who was with us. Yomar na Yisrael. Come, Israel, say it. And I want you to see that the word na here does not mean please. It means now. Join in with me. And they all call out. Lulei Hashem shehayalanu, were it not for Hashem that was with us. Bekum aleinu Adam, when people rose up against us. So what you've got here is, you have an audience, and you have somebody who is the vocalist, and he speaks for them in singular, telling each one to say together, Rabat Tzraruni Minu'urai. Now you know the word Tzara, Tzuras. Tzraruni is a double language. And a double language means they made me lots of tzuras. They troubled me, they abused me, and they did it rabat. Now rabat is a poetic form that is not in this case nismach, which means attached to, but rather means a lot, and a lot of. A lot of troubles, a lot of times, a lot of means and ways. Oh, they came up with a lot of, you name it, to trouble me. And they did it from my youth. My youth, in this case, is a nation's youth. And refers, in fact, to Am Yisrael in Egypt. Oh, way back from way back when they've been doing this. Rabat Tzraruni Minu'urai. They've been doing it ever since then, but Lo Yachluli, they could not. And you'll know that word, Lachol Yacholi, is, remember, about Yisrael. Sarita im Elokim Vatuchal. You struggled, you wrestled with the angels, with God Himself. Vatuchal, and you prevailed. Gam lo yachluli, they could not prevail over me. They could not succeed. But what did they now do? And now comes the retrospective. Not necessarily about Egypt, but about things that they did since then. Al gabi charshu choshim, he'erichu lema'anitam. Now, I want you to get this image in your head. It says here specifically, literally, on my back, the plowers plowed. And they extended, made long, the rows. A ma'anit is the row, the furrow, that the plow makes. Please get that image in your head, because we're trying to understand exactly what it is that they did. Some say that it is imagining Am Yisrael as a beast of burden upon whose back they put the yoke, forcing him to pull the plow and making the row that he has to plow very long. In other words, forced labor, torturous labor. But literally, it's saying they plowed on my back. And the Medrash describes a form of torture in which they used to lay them down on the fields and have the plows ride over them, cutting their back. So you could also imagine this in the form of whipping. When somebody is beaten and furrows are plowed on his back, and it is done over and over and over again. What then continues is Hashem Tzadik, but God is just. He's righteous. And what will he do, or what did he do? Kitzetz is past tense. Says Radak, this is past tense, meaning the future. As he did then, he will do in the future. He will cut avot reshaim. The avot are thick poles to which you attach the plow, and that is strapped onto the back of the oxen for them to pull this heavy plow. By cutting, if you like, those poles, you are freeing the oxen. God will cut those bonds. That terminology, you see, I have a footnote here for you, is similar to what was written in Vayikra. In Vayikra, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam tells us, Ani Hashem Elokechem, I am Hashem your God, asher hoceti etchem me'eretz Mitzrayim, miyot lahem avadim. I am Hashem your God who took you out of the land of Egypt and took you out from them, from you being slaves to them. Ve'eshbor motot ulchem, and I broke the poles of your yokes. Imagine the yokes that's put on the neck of an animal. And that animal is then attached by poles either to a wagon or, in this case, to a heavy plow. And I will lead you standing upright. Because the beast carrying a heavy burden on its back has its head facing the ground. To others, this is nothing more than a metaphor describing oppression, humiliation, turning you into a beast of burden. But of course, we know full well that throughout our history, this was not merely a metaphor, but was actually done literally to us. If you've ever seen pictures from the Shoah, you will have seen human beings attached to wagons, attached to heavy burdens, and whipped to carry it, to move it forward as if they were, in fact, beasts of burden. Hashem did it then, he will then do it now. Radak says that the youth here is from the beginning of my golus, not necessarily referring only to Egypt, but what happened to Egypt then occurred to us when we lost our homeland and were dispersed amongst the nations and were sent into exile. Explains Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. Let's make it clear. Those who hate us, those who oppress us, do not do it because we've earned it. We didn't do anything to deserve it, but rather, they despise, they hate what we stand for. We stand for one God, for the fact that every human being was created in his image. We stand for a moral code, and that's what they despise. That is the source of the fact that they hate us. The fact that we do not believe that might makes right. That it is not a case of how many people vote one way or the other that makes it right. And as a result, continues the next part. Yevoshu veyisogu achor. May they be humiliated. May they retreat, turn back. Kol sonei Tzion. All those who hate Tzion. Ah, how marvelous. Rashi, Mitzudot, most of the Mefarshim say those who hate Zion are those who hate the Jews. Those that hate the Jews hate Zion. Some people call it, I am not anti-Jewish, I'm not anti-Semitic, I'm anti-Zionist. It is very interesting that amongst Yerushalmim of the old Yishuv, when you wanted to speak about those that persecute us, they're called Son of Zion. Even before there was a Zionist idea, there was a concept of Sonei Zion, those who despise Zion. Remember that many people hide their anti-Semitism by indicating that, oh, they're just opposed to the oppressive state of Israel. It is an excuse. Sonei Zion or Sonei Yisrael. It's one and the same. There is no different. They will all be put to shame. They will be forced to retreat. Comes Radak, writing in the Middle Ages, in light of something that had not happened before, and that was the Crusades and the war between Islam and Christendom, each of them trying to reconquer Zion, which is another word for Yerushalayim. Says Radak, oh no, they don't hate Zion. On the contrary, they love Zion, which is why they keep trying to conquer it. They keep trying to take it over. They want to be in Zion. They believe that Zion no longer belongs to the Jew. Zion belongs either to the Muslims or Zion belongs to the Christians. It belongs to anyone but to the Jew. And their theology is such that they must believe that it does not revert to us and that the covenant long since been canceled. That's why they call it the New Covenant, or in English, the New Testament, arguing that the Old Testament is null and void, no longer valid. These are Sonei Zion, he says. Oh, they hate the Jew, all right, but they love the land, which is why they fight for it, says Radak in the context of his history. He says, no, they won't. But what we're being told here is that they will be humiliated and they will need to retreat, that they will not succeed in their conquest. They might hold on to it for a little while, but it'll transfer hands from the Romans to the Ottomans to the Christians until ultimately it will become the Jews. Because what do we know about Zion? Yiyu kechatzir gagot shekadmat shalaf yavesh. They will be, whoever else tries to settle in Zion, other than the people who for whom it was promised, they will be like straw put on the rooftops, like the straw that is put on thatched roofs. Believe it or not, there was such a thing as taking bundles of straw, putting it layer upon layer on rooftops, to serve as a covering. That straw sometimes has seeds in it. Those seeds, exposed now to the sunlight and to the rain, sometimes sprout. A sprout here, a sprout there. But because they do not have soil in which to put root, what happens to those sprouts on the rooftops? Kadmat shalaf. Before they even begin to sprout out, come out, they dry up. For they do not have roots in Eretz Yisrael. The terminology here is in fact to indicate that no nation has been able to make Eretz Yisrael bloom. All that took it over ended up with a dry, miserable, poor land. So I wanted to share with you just a small little snippet from none other than Mark Twain, Innocents Abroad. Mark Twain, like many Christians, went in the 19th century, and if you were rich enough, or if you somebody sponsored you, or if you were a devout missionary and Christian, you would go to Eretz Israel to go to see the Holy Land and hope to see its glory as you read about it in the Bible. He writes back And this was published in newspapers. Eventually, all of those letters that he sent about his travels abroad became the book called Innocence Abroad. There he describes his trip to the Holy Land. Of all the lands there are for dismal scenery, I think Palestine must be the prince. Renowned Jerusalem itself, the stateliest name in history, has lost all its ancient grandeur and has become a pauper village. The riches of Solomon are no longer there to compel the admiration of visiting Oriental queens. The wonderful temple, which was the pride and glory of Israel, is gone. Palestine is desolate and unlovely. And why should it be otherwise? Palestine is no more of this workday world. It is sacred to poetry and tradition. It is dreamland, except for one group of people who would not forget it, who said, Im eshkachech Yerushalayim, tishkach yemini. If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, I will forget my right hand. These are the Jews that would not leave it alone, and only they dry up its marshes and make its desert bloom again. No other nation succeeded, not even the Romans. When the Romans ruled there, so long as the Jews were still in Israel, they could build marvelous palaces and colosseums. When they exiled the Jews, they ultimately abandoned it as a God-forsaken place and abandoned all of the buildings that they built and all of the aquifers that they built and saw it as nothing more than a dried, empty ruin. What then is left in Jerusalem? Some paupers, some peasants. Peasants who try to make the earth give them something to eat. Shelo mile kapo kotzer. And those falachim, those peasants, managed to plow something the field and didn't have enough to fill his palm with what he could harvest. And he could not even fill his chitzno me'amer. Rashi says chitzno is his bosom, and the amer is a sheath. There wasn't enough to take a sheath to fill up one's bosom. Others tell us that the chotzen is the bottom of your garment in which you would have collected your sheaves, your grain. Others tell us that a chitzno was actually a sling that you carried. There wasn't enough from a whole field to fill up one of those slings. Not nearly enough. Ve'lo amru ha'ovrim. And those that passed by, or those that passed by the country, that came there for a while, ha'ovrim, say Chazal, are the umot ha'olam, the nations that tried to conquer Eretz Yisrael. They never said, Birkat Hashem Eleichem. May the blessings of God be on you. This is meant to remind you of the story of Ruth. You remember that Boaz came to the field. Boaz, an honorable man. And there in the field were his harvesters. And walking behind the harvesters were the gleaners, the poor people who took what was left over. Vihine Boaz ba mi Beit Lechem. Boaz came from Beit Lechem. Please notice that it's called Beit Lechem, the house of bread. Vayomar lakotzrim, and he sees the harvesters and he greets them. Because how must one greet somebody? Hashem imachem, may God be with you. And they responded, Vayomru lo yivarechecha Hashem, may God bless you. You see, it was customary that when you saw people in the streets, you blessed them, you said hello. In fact, even today when we say Shalom Aleichem, Shalom is one of the names of Hashem. Peace be upon you. And how do you respond? Aleichem HaShalom, may peace be upon you. Go with God. Ah, may God go with you. And that's how you respond. Ha'ovrim. Those that passed by didn't say Birkat Hashem Aleichem. Why didn't they say? Because these were goyim. And these goyim, there was nothing to bless. Says Radak and Rashi and Ibn Ezra. It was such a paltry harvest. There was so little growing there, barely enough to survive on. That's all there was. You certainly wouldn't call this a broche. You would call it a klole. It was a curse. Those that tried to plow or make things grow in the land of Israel that don't belong there could not make the earth yield anything. There was no blessing to it. But I want to share with you two midrashim. One midrash tells us as follows. Al gabi charshu chorshim. On my back they plowed. He says, I want you to imagine that a man had a cow. Came the neighbors and said, can we borrow your cow to plow our fields? Of course, because until I take my cow. The problem is that the neighbors had 10 sons. So they took the cow, and first he plowed his field. Then he gave it to one son. Then he gave it to the second son. By the time he returned the cow had just finished plowing 10 fields, or 11 fields, and had a broken back. The poor owner sees his cow. She's worthless now for any further plowing. He could do only one thing. Cut the reins, remove the yoke, and let her grow grazing in the fields. For that, say Chazal, God said, you were used and abused by one nation after another. And they handed you over from one nation to another, using you, forcing you to labor for them, making them rich. And now they return a broken people to me. I will cut those reins. I will cut the yoke. I will make you a free people to graze in my land after all of the tzuras that you had. Rabat tzaruni minurai. So says the Medrash. And then another Medrash speaks about who is these Ovrim. Lo amru ha-Ovrim. Those that passed by, who saw us working, who saw us laboring, didn't have a good word to say to us. They saw us enslaved and couldn't even greet us. They never said Birkat Hashem Aleichem, as was customary. It was customary that when you saw somebody working hard in his fields, you would wish them that may God's blessing fall on you so that you don't labor for naught, so that you may reap what you sowed. They never did this to us. That's one medrash. Another medrash tells us as follows. Ha'ovrim were the goyim who took over our fields, who took over our land, and they could not reap it, and there was nothing there for them. And so they did not bless us, and they did not bless one another. But as for us, Berachnu etchem b'shem Hashem, we did bless you. Wherever we were, we brought prosperity. And when you kicked us out, your countries became poor again. That was the story for Spain. That was the story for Portugal. That was the story for wherever we were, not only in Eretz Israel. We, in our dispersion, made the lands that welcomed us rich. And when they began to persecute us, they made the lands poor. But there's something else that I wanted to share with you that Chazal learned quoting this particular mizmor, and I think it's very important. Chazal teach us that we do not respond of sin'ah tachat sin'ah, giving hatred for hatred, but instead do what David HaMelech said, tachat ahavati istenuni. In lieu of my love, they persecuted me. We seek the welfare of all peoples. Say Chazal as follows. Sho'alim bishloman, we seek the welfare and we greet every goy. Some say mipnei darkei shalom, for the sake of peace. Remember, some of this was written while the Romans had their thumb on our backs. You understand? Crushing us. Chazal tell us, Hevei me'akdim shalom lechol adam. And this is in Pirkei Avot. Be the first one to greet every person. When you're out in the street, no matter how he looks, no matter who he is, be the first one to say hello. And they tell us about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Remember, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai lived through the destruction of Beit HaMikdash and saw the torture of his compatriots. It says here as follows, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai never had somebody say hello to him first. He always greeted somebody first, even Nochri Bashuk, even a goy in the marketplace. He would say first, hello to him, how are you? Shalom Aleichem, my blessings upon you. We need to do this not only by words which cost us nothing, but Chazal in Masechet Gittin go a step further. They tell us, when the goyim come to glean from our fields, when they stretch out their hands asking for a donation, give it to them, mipnei darkei sholem. And Chazal tell us, lahaloche, we take care of the poor of the goyim, just like we take care of the poor of the Eden. And we're mevakel cholim, we visit the sick that are goyim, just as we're mevakel chole of the Eden. It's something that we sometimes forget. I know that we have to come first, aniye ilcha kodmim, but it's sometimes forgotten that when you go out in the street, no matter how they look, even if they're carrying a sign called BLM, you're supposed to say, hello, good morning, how are you? Even then you're supposed to do this. Why? Because they may not have said Birkat Hashem Aleichem, but we, Birachnu Etchem B'Shem Hashem, we blessed you in the name of God.